This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I am Yehius Wuhib in Washington. And here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It is important for the people of the Gambia to understand that the COVID-19 is real and it is not a joke. And this is why the Gambia Police Force will not joke with the enforcement of these regulations.
That was the spokesperson for the Gambia Police Force speaking about arrests of people who defy the new COVID-19 curfew. Details coming up also. Anti-government protests are set to resume in Mali today. Uganda is set to have general elections next year. And press freedom groups are calling on Ethiopian authorities to release Kenyan journalist Yasin Juma. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Mass anti-government protests are set to resume in Mali this afternoon. The country has been plunged into political crisis as the M5 opposition movement demands President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita step down amid widespread insecurity and accusations of corruption and nepotism. For more, VOA's Jason Patinkin spoke to journalist Bram Posthumus in Bamako. Posthumus first explains what is at stake for the opposition.
What's at stake is very much, I think, M5's reputation. There have been reports in Malian media about divisions at the top. There have been reports about some of the figureheads, not Imam Diko himself, but some of the other figureheads, former Minister Muntaka Tall and others, leaving the movement. I think they're very, very aware of the fact that their image has been tarnished by the July events, because Malians do not take kindly to vandalism, any kind of vandalism, looting, which occurred on a large scale in Bamako in July. So that is something that they want to prevent. And the other thing, obviously, is the cohesion of the movement. So it's the image and the cohesion of the movement and whether they can keep this together. And this is obviously being complicated by the fact that the Malian government does not move.
And let's talk about that. What is the government's response to these planned protests? Is there any indication that the president will step down?
The government's position has been very consistent in that it says, listen, President Keita has been duly elected as president for a period of 5 years. And so he is not going to step down until that second mandate, which he is now fulfilling, has expired. And this is in 2023. And the government has been very consistent about this. The key demand of the opposition M5 movement, President Keita must go, is something that has always been answered by the government with the same statement saying, no, he's not going, he's been elected, and he will stay on.
Now, what's Bamako like today? Are there police deployed in the streets?
There is an enormous police presence in the city, and this is building on previous experience after the July 10-11 events, when things got very, very badly out of hand. The police have been very active, or rather very proactive, in ensuring that whatever blockade of a major thoroughfare or a major bridge across the Niger River, whenever there was any sign that these big arteries of Bamako were going to be blocked, they moved in and quickly removed whoever was trying to do the blocking. From what I'm hearing is that there is something similar happening right now, in the sense that there is a huge police presence very certainly close to the Independence Place, the Independence Square, where this demonstration is going to take place or is supposed to be taking place. And it is very likely that the authorities have decided to prevent anything major from happening.
One last thing is that I hear there may be some rainy weather today in Bamako. Is that also a concern for the protesters?
We're in the middle of the rainy season, and heavy, heavy thunderstorms have been predicted for today. And this means, in very practical terms, that parts of this city get flooded. which means that people either cannot even physically get to the demonstration or they can't go home after the demonstration. This may well prevent people from taking part in any manifestation. Imam Dicko, who is the de facto leader of this movement, has said, no matter, even if it rains solidly for 5 hours, we'll be out there in what they've built as the greatest sit-in in the history of the country, but they may well be bluffing.
That was journalist Bram Potsumas in Bamako, Mali, speaking to my VOA colleague Jason Patenkin. Police have arrested dozens of people accused of violating the dusk to dawn curfew in the Gambia. The 21-day curfew is part of the government's efforts to control the spread of COVID-19. Reporter Panderambai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Police stations within the Greater Banjul area have been crowded with arrested people. All the arrests were made in the upcountry as police enforced the 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew that was imposed amid a spike in coronavirus. The Gambia has a total of 1,235 cases and 23 deaths. Superintendent Lamin Jai is the spokesperson for the Gambia Police Force. He says more than 80 people have been arrested around the country. They face a fine of up to $100.
These regulations are equally laws of the Gambia, and the Gambia Police Force will not relent in enforcing them. Today, as we speak, there are some people, especially those that are arrested at the level of the anti-crime unit, are going to be arraigned before the court. And these individuals can get a fine up to $5,000 for flouting this regulation. So therefore, it is important for the people of the Gambia to understand that the COVID-19 is real and it is not a joke, and this is why the Gambia Police Force will not joke with the enforcement of these regulations.
Lamin Seka, a U.S. deportee who now is a small businessman, is out on bail after being arrested. He says the conditions in detention are not good.
I tell the officer, you have to save people or you try to make people sick, because the bunch of people you are bringing here, you don't know who's sick. And when you hold somebody's hand, you're supposed to wear a glove because you're an officer. You hold my hand to make me fingerprint, you're supposed to wear a glove. And then some of them officers don't wear the mask all the way up.
Seka says cells are overcrowded and unsafe.
Like I said, inside a cell, 45 people. Right there by the counter, 20 people. And outside, there might be 25 people outside. Some of them inside in the cell, they wear, but half of them don't wear a mask.
Njai says he was not in the position to confirm Seka's allegations.
I may not be able to verify that story. We will perhaps investigate at the level of this police station, but also we want to assure the public to understand that the Gambia Police Force is operating within the guidelines of the Ministry of Health and the WHO in preventing our officers themselves and also detainees or individuals that are in our hands during the course of processing them.
Meanwhile, Vice President Aishatou Touré, who tested positive for COVID-19, has now tested negative, along with the Health Minister, Dr. Amadou Lamin Samaté, who was in quarantine. For VOA News, this is Panderimbai reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The Malawi government last week announced new rules aimed to prevent the spread of COVID-19. The rules restrict public gatherings to only 10 people. Those who disobey face a fine of about $130 or a 3-month jail sentence. But religious leaders in Malawi say they are concerned with the regulation because it will restrict people from attending church gatherings. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Church gatherings have led to increase the spread of the new coronavirus in several countries around the world. But religious leaders in Malawi say a new rule restricting gatherings to 10 people or less is unnecessary. Titus Divala is an epidemics specialist at Malawi College of Medicine. He says that he expects the Ministry of Health to maintain its position on the 10 people gathering restriction.
The church gatherings are even more dangerous because in churches we have more old people than other gatherings. So at this particular point in time, it's time to make sure that people who are at higher risk of dying from COVID-19 are very protected. and the current guidelines actually will protect those people.
Divala warned that making compromises in efforts to fight the pandemic would result in more cases of COVID-19 in Malawi. However, religious leaders fought government for not consulting them before coming up with the rules. Prophet David Mbewe is chairperson for Prophetic Ministries Association of Malawi. He told a press conference in the capital, Lilongwe, Monday, that churches are already observing public health measures, so they should not be closed.
Simply because we have to observe social distancing of at least 1 meter, hand washing at church, temperature checking, all these other measures the church has been observing and following without breaching the law.
In a statement Monday, a grouping of Catholic bishops under Episcopal Conference of Malawi asked government to hold a meeting with religious leaders to review the restriction, a move the Muslims Association of Malawi supports. Kumbize Chiponda is Malawi's health minister.
We got concerns from the faith community, from the church leaders. So what I have said is that we are going to engage them. They have umbrella bodies which we are going to meet their leaders.
Chiponda did not mention the date of the meeting, but said it would be soon. COVID-19 cases in Malawi are spiking at an average of 100 new infections per day. As of Tuesday, Malawi confirmed over 4,600 cases of COVID-19 with more than 140 deaths. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Uganda is set to have general elections next year, and campaigns are to be conducted virtually in order to curtail the spread of COVID-19. But opposition members and critics say new restrictions announced in the last week are actually meant to repress politicians opposing President Yoweri Museveni, who is looking to extend his 34-year tenure. Reporter Mugume Devizarawa Karinji has more from Kampala, Uganda.
In the latest restrictions, police say they are enforcing the so-called violence suppression units. The units are meant to disperse crowds that gather around media stations to support politicians who are being interviewed inside. Police are also requiring media houses to submit schedules of which politicians they will interview during the election campaigns. Ronald Kabuye, the spokesperson for Uganda Journalists Association, alleges the violence suppression units are meant to gag and suppress media and political rights in the country. Kabuye says the police are targeting those opposed the ruling government. He points a recent incident involving the Democratic Party, ODP, which is one of Uganda's oldest opposition parties.
We just had a case in point where one of the radio stations in Jinja, in the eastern region, requested a police in Jinja that they are going to host the DP president, Norbert Mao, and they were stopped. What is funny, they even refused it. They refused the media house to host even Mao via Zoom.
Over the weekend, police fired tear gas to disperse crowds that had gathered at a media house that was expected to host another politician, Robert Chagurani, also known as Bobi Wine. Chagurani of the National Unity Party is running against President Seven. Journalist Kenneth Rukwago is the producer of the Spectrum program, a popular political talk show in Uganda. He says he doubts the violence suppression units were created in good faith. He says the restrictions by the police will negatively impact press freedom.
The police is going to use this technically to tell us that, look, we are unable to clear this particular request, and in so doing, they will deny a particular media house an opportunity to host a particular guest. So I don't think submitting of lists for clearance to inform them that we are going to host so and so beyond 9 p.m. is acceptable.
Uganda police spokesman Fred Enanga says police will disperse gatherings outside media stations. He says the crowds are recipes for the spread of COVID-19 and violence.
The people who gather in their hundreds, thousands at these television and radio stations, what is the guarantee by you, the politician who is on the radio, those who are summoning them? So for them, they are using it as a political tool, but it has a health impact.
Solomon Sirwanyi, the ruling party commissioner of parliament, says all politicians from the political divide should be freely allowed to campaign on various media platforms.
If anybody is doing anything, maybe a security personnel denying people, I think they are doing that on their own basis as individuals. And they should be held accountable as individuals, because every Ugandan has a right, respective of the political party, to access any media house.
Besides Chagurani and Museveni, Long-time opposition leader Kizza Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change could also vie for Uganda's presidency. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Press freedom groups are calling on Ethiopian authorities to release Kenyan journalist Yasin Juma, who was detained last month. A court in Addis Ababa last Thursday ordered Ethiopian authorities to release Juma after failing to produce evidence that he committed a crime. Juma was arrested last month while covering a protest. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Kenyan journalist Yasin Juma has been held in Ethiopia since his arrest in early July, despite a court ordering his release on bail last Thursday. Juma's lawyer, Tuli Bayesa, went back to court Monday to push for Juma's release after having paid the bail. He says the judge told him police are refusing to let Juma go.
They are telling that first, because the federal police officer that has been investigating them, and they are now saying that the Addis Ababa Police Commission wants to investigate into the matter once again, the state.
Juma was arrested along with two Ethiopian journalists while covering protests that erupted after the killing of Oromo singer Hachalu Hundaisa. Hundaisa, known for his political and activist songs, was gunned down in Addis Ababa in July, sparking widespread ethnic tensions. Ethiopian police arrested the journalist along with opposition members and leader Jawar Mohammed at his home. Police accused them of working together and charged them with inciting ethnic violence and plotting to kill Ethiopian officials. The court ordered their release on bail after police officers failed to produce evidence of any crimes, says Bayesa.
They have to release the suspect, and if they are dissatisfied with the decision of the court that is granting bail, they have to appeal against that decision. And unless that decision has been suspended by higher courts, the police is duty-bound to release them in due time. But now Yasin and the rest of 11 suspects are illegally detained by the police officer, as far as we know.
This is not the first time Ethiopian police have ignored court orders to release detained journalists. The Committee to Protect Journalists, CPJ, says an Ethiopian court in March ordered police to release three arrested journalists, but police continued to detain them for weeks before finally letting them go. Muthoki Mumu is a CPJ's representative for Sub-Saharan Africa.
And I would just like to emphasize that the concern about the respect of court orders in the cases of journalists who are detained for us at CPJ goes beyond this very moment, and goes even historically if we look at what has been happening in Ethiopia since January. We have previously researched and documented cases where journalists have been ordered released and they were not released.
Kenyan media reports the country's ambassador in Addis Ababa, Catherine Mwangi, sent a protest note on Juma's detention to Ethiopia's foreign ministry. The Nation Media Group quoted Mwangi writing that the embassy notes with concern that he has still not been released and that this is causing him and his family a lot of distress. Despite the arrest of journalists, France-based media rights group Reporters Without Borders says Ethiopia has risen 11 places in its 2020 World Press Freedom Index. The improvement is credited to the government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, who was elected in 2018 on a reformist platform. His government released jailed journalists and bloggers and restored more than 200 websites and blogs that had for years been blocked. But Ahmed's government continues to restrict some press freedoms, including arresting journalists and limiting internet access during periods of unrest, such as the recent protests. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Tanzanian opposition leader Tundu Lissu was chosen last week to take on President John Magufuli's in October's general elections. Lissu returned to Tanzania recently for the first time since 2017 when the Magufuli critic was shot 16 times by a known gunman but survived. Political analysts and Tanzanians weigh in on Lissu's chances against Magufuli, who critics say is increasingly authoritarian. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
It was September 7, 2017,
when prominent lawyer turned politician Tundu Lissu survived an assassination attempt in Dodoma. He spent nearly 3 years recovering in Belgium before returning to Tanzania a week ago. He's now attempting to unseat the incumbent, President John Magufuli, in the October polls.
Tangu mwaka 2015, kumekuwa na vita ya waziwazi.
Lissu says that since 2015, there has been an open war against the multi-party system and some attempts to turn us back to the dark years. He adds that the problem is a big one and that no one is going back to those dark days. Lissu's supporters say their candidate will win in the coming election because he's going to offer a leadership style that contrasts with that of Magufuli, whose critics blame him for suppression of democracy. Ibrahim Chawe is a member of Chadema Party and a communication officer for the Chadema Youth Organization.
Tundu Lissu ana uwezo wa kushinda kwa asilimia zote 100.
Chawe says, we believe in Lissu because he has something that he can tell Tanzanians, and it's understood that means his policies and strategy to contest the position, but also the performance of the current government is going to help our candidate to win. Chawe adds that the fifth government has made many Tanzanians to live under economic difficulties and in an economy that is only for a few people. Magufuli has pledged peaceful and credible elections and has said he is ready to continue for a second term in order to fulfill his journey of saving Tanzanians and boosting the country's economy. Those with different party colors, which are not green, will they really come to do this? Magufuli asks. Those who are cooperating with capitalists to steal our minerals are now going to change to help us? That's why, he says, I'm contesting again for another 5 years. Political analysts like Abdul Karim Aliamtu say the new roads, railways, and power plants that have sprung up under Magufuli give the president a chance to win another term. Atiki says, for almost 3 decades since the coming of the multi-party system in Tanzania, there has never been development reaching to the people as there has been in this term with President Magufuli. He adds that critics like Lissu say development is meant for people and not material things, but the infrastructure is what is bringing development. Another political analyst, Mbwana Aliamtu, says Lissu has a good chance in the October polls due to his outstanding presence in the Tanzania politics. Aliamtu says Lissu has been seen as an outstanding opposition candidate, and when you look at him in terms of the coming elections, you find he's a bigger asset for the opposition and someone who will bring a bigger change in challenging the president in power. Aliamtu adds that, though Lissu may or may not win, he will bring about big changes. Magufuli came to power in 2015 and has managed to boost government revenue and begin reforms of the mining industry. His opponents accuse him of cracking down on political dissent and freedom of speech, something that he denies. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.